Chapter 7 Petty Officer Third Class Randall was in the Boomer's rec room, trying to concentrate as he stared at the computer screen, studying for an exam. He needed good marks on the exam to advance to E5, Petty Officer Second Class. The serious nature of the training material did not make it any less dull to read, and Randall was about to pause the screen to refresh his coffee cup when the screen flashed, went blue, then a bold message appeared. "Please turn on the speakers," the message read.
"What the hell?"
Randall looked around. The two other people in the compartment were busy, headphones on, ignoring him. The nuclear missile submarine was 200 feet below the surface in the North Pacific. The message had to be a prank, played by someone elsewhere aboard the sub.
"Fine," he muttered under his breath. "I'll play along." At least he no longer needed coffee.
"Who is this?" he typed.
"I could tell you if you turned the speakers on."
That message disappeared, followed by, "You dum-dum."
"Hey, I don't have to take this."
The message now read, "Fine, I'll do it myself, stupid monkeys."
"Hey, dumbass!"
A voice boomed out of the computer speakers. It was arrogant, with a vaguely English accent. Randall had gone to the Royal Navy subbase at Faslane back when he served aboard a Virginia-class attack boat. Some of those Brits with their upper-crust accents had been irritating. He always got the impression they looked down their noses at him.
"Yeah, I'm talking to you, Randall," the voice continued.
"Screw you, whoever this. While I would dearly love to engage in witless banter with you, sadly I do not have time. Please get Senior Chief Petty Officer Rourke and bring him here. His son Christopher wishes to speak with him ASAP. Chop, chop. Move along now. Be a good boy."
"You want Chief Rourke?"
Randall's face drained of color. Rourke did not like tricks being played on him. This had to be a trick.
"Where is his son calling from?"
He remembered the chief's son was in the Marines, a fact that was the source of much good-natured ribbing from the crew. Rumor had it the son was a raider. Randall hadn't paid attention beyond that bit of trivia.
"You are not going to believe this," the voice replied with weariness.
"I'm not doing anything for you."
Randall stepped away from the computer as the two other people had taken off their headphones to see who he was talking with. Two other people had their heads stuck in the compartment in curiosity.
"I tried to do this discreetly, but no, you had to be a jerk about it."
The voice switched from the small computer speakers to the boat's 1MC system, the main communication circuit for the entire boat.
"OCP O'Rourke, your son Christopher wants to talk with you."
"You ready, Reed?" I asked without giving her my full attention, or as much attention as I could while I fretted about how many people we would have in the crew when the Flying Dutchman jumped away. There was the slightest hesitation that spoke volumes, along with a sigh, before she answered.
"Yes, sir. Ready."
"Ready and willing?"
"The willing part is kind of optional, isn't it?"
She started an eye roll but stopped with her eyes looking at the ceiling.
I nodded. "Listen, Reed. I sure as hell am not looking forward to spending a couple of months." I was deliberately being wildly optimistic about the timeline, and she knew it. "Stuck in this tin can." I rapped knuckles on the bulkhead. "With freeze-dried food and an asshole AI. But somebody has to do it, and we're here, and you are qualified to fly all our dropship models." Her pride made her interject with,
"I'm 3/4 of the way through the training to fly the Dutchman too, sir."
"Right. See? We need you and Porter. Unless you want me flying this Frankenship," I said with a wink.
"No, that's...
Her face reddened as she couldn't think of what to say without insulting me.
"We need you in the command chair, sir."
Her weak grin was a sort of apology.
"Oh, what the hell?"
Her shoulders fell, then straightened.
"Embrace the suck, I guess. That's the spirit."
I raised a hand to thump her back, then thought that would be a bad idea as I was her commanding officer. So I gave her an exaggerated 2 thumbs up.
"Remind me of that 2 years from now,"
she did roll her eyes,
"when we're surviving on sludges and the backup reactor is shutting down."
"Excellent. You're already embracing the suck that hasn't happened yet. That is the kind of forward thinking we need." My grin was forced, because I was also hating the idea of limping our beat-up Frankenship on another no-expense-included tour of the Orion Arm.
"Sir, one request."
"What's that, Captain?"
"Can I get a different call sign?
Fireball was kind of a joke that has stayed around too long.
Oh, sure. You can request another call sign. I smiled, and she beamed happily right before I crushed her hopes.
Right after people stopped calling me Barney.
Crap, she groaned.
That is never going to happen.
Jennifer Sims was lucky, or unlucky, depending on your point of view. She had been interrogated by officials of UNEF Command and the U.S. military, first at Wright Pat, then at Fort Hood. Army leadership made it clear they were not happy with the results of the Flying Dutchman's last extended mission. Hans Chotek had been placed in charge because UNEF wanted less risk, not more. Did Chotek and Bishop and Chang not understand that very simple fact? Sims had patiently replied that there had not been time to return to Earth for consultations, that the command team had used their best judgment under the situation, and could the second-guessing officials on Earth suggest what the Merry Band of Pirates should or even could have done differently? The stuttering non-answers had made her smile inside, while on the outside she retained the serious or neutral expression that she hoped would get her through the endless and repetitive debriefing as quickly as possible. She was lucky, because the officials did not consider her a security risk. Her role as a logistics officer aboard the Dutchman allowed her to escape the blame assigned to Chotek, Bishop, and Chang, though as third in command she had worked many duty shifts in the CIC or command chair on the bridge. The main factor in her favor was the conversation she had with Bishop when she had told him she did not intend to rejoin the crew if the Dutchman went back out. Her phone had, of course, been tapped when Bishop called. Sims apparently washing her hands of future involvement with the pirates in general, and Bishop in particular, satisfied security concerns that she was not a risk. That is why she had been alone when the Delta team attempted to seize control of the starship. A last-minute ass-covering panic sent an FBI team racing to her home, too late to prevent her from running off into the pre-dawn darkness in an escape she had not planned and still wasn't certain she wanted. Her plan to settle down into a relatively normal life went out the window when she had run out the back door at the urging of an untrustworthy beer can. If Jennifer Sims had doubts about whether she could be considered lucky, Margaret Adams had no such doubts. Luck was firmly set against her, though luck, as monkeys understood the concept, had little to do with her unhappy situation. While Sims had been allowed to take leave, being monitored merely by a tracer placed on her regular cell phone, Adams was still restricted to base when the Delta team soared into orbit. Like Sims, Adams was not blamed for the reckless actions of the ship's command crew. Unlike the logistics officer who had also been with Bishop since the beginning, Gunnery Sergeant Adams was not as skilled at hiding her emotions. Her open disdain for the second-guessing desk jockeys on Earth had worked against her. But the reason she was restricted to base was the unanimous assessment by a team of Marine Corps psychologists that her loyalty to Joseph Bishop was stronger than her sense of duty. In the assessment report, it was hinted that her relationship with Bishop might become inappropriate, if it was not already. The official reason Adams was restricted to base was because her knowledge of secrets made her a target for foreign agents, and because the Marine Corps needed her to transfer her practical knowledge of tactics to Marine raider teams. Why, she had asked herself, was she a security risk, but the raiders were given freedom of movement after she told them everything she knew about space infantry tactics? The official reasons were bullshit. She knew it. The Marine Corps knew it, and all she could do was play along. Her best shot at another assignment aboard the Flying Dutchman was to cooperate and throw herself into the work to the best of her ability. The raider teams who were subjected to her tender training methods could have wished she demonstrated a bit less enthusiasm and determination for whipping them into shape. When Skippy realized the dropship approaching the Dutchman was carrying a mech-suited Delta team rather than the supplies on the manifest, Margaret was already up and getting dressed when the beer can called. At the same time, there was a knock on the door to her quarters.
"Gunny?" a muffled voice called through the door.
"I'll be right there," Margaret answered in a loud, clear voice, reaching for the Z-phone that Skippy had somehow smuggled to her, when she froze. On the phone's display was a text from Skippy. "Trouble up here. Hide the phone. They might search you." Her intention had been to bring the high-tech alien phone with her like she did every day, both so she would have communications with Skippy and Bishop, and so people snooping around her quarters would not find it. She had seen the unmistakable signs that someone had searched her quarters every day while she was away, and no way would she risk losing the precious Z-phone. With the phone no longer or thicker than a credit card,
She had been carrying it inside her panties, clipped to the waistband. The tiny earpiece was carried in her ear, for only a determined search could find the thing. The original Kristang earpiece for the phone was a soft plastic thing that molded itself to the inner ear. Sometimes users had to jam it in uncomfortably because human ear canals were smaller than those of the Kristang the units had been designed for. Skippy had long since replaced the crude earpieces with a modified Theranin design that was much smaller, more comfortable, more effective, and had only the drawback of being really, really creepy. The units cranked out by the Dutchman's fabricators were no larger than a sesame seed when folded up for storage, and when folded up, they were not creepy at all. The creepy part was how the earpieces got in place and held themselves there. To use an earpiece, a user clicked on an icon, then tapped the right side of their Z-phone where Skippy's modifications had carved out a niche to hold 5 earpieces. Dropping into the user's hand, the dark blue sesame seed adhered with almost invisible tiny legs until that hand was cupped over the user's ear. That was when the creepy part started. The seed grew long, spider-like legs and crawled down into the inner ear, holding itself in place with gecko-like hairs on the end of the legs. Skippy swore that no way could humans feel the tiny earpieces moving into place, but he was so wrong about that. Worse than the sensation of the device moving in or out was the thing repositioning itself throughout the day, and the few users who tried to wear the units overnight had been unable to sleep. The new, advanced earpieces were still a problem for Adams. She felt fairly certain the Marine Corps would not look inside her underwear, but doctors and security personnel had been trained to recognize an earpiece, so she couldn't take the Z-phone with her. Thinking fast and smiling to herself that Joe Bishop would have approved, she smeared toothpaste on the Z-phone, ducked down, and stuck it under the bathroom sink behind the faucet plumbing. Whoever was at the door knocked again, the second time more insistently. Striding quickly across the floor, she flung the door open to see a staff sergeant and a private waiting for her.
"Thank you for the escort, but I know where the chow hall is."
Neither of the stone-faced Marines cracked a smile.
"Gunnery Sergeant, you need to come with us."
The staff sergeant glanced over her shoulder to see the spotless, flawlessly ship-shaped room. Adams nodded, wishing Skippy had time to tell her what was going on.
"Colonel Bishop," Sims called from the CIC. "Gunny Adams is calling," she reported as she pointed to the communications console.
"Is she on a Z-phone?" I asked,
knowing she would have called me directly if she had her trusty Skippy-tell device with her.
"No," Sims shook her head. "This is an official call. Should I tell her you're busy?"
"I'm never too busy for a friend in need," I declared, getting an appreciative smile from Sims. "Whatever Adams has to say, I'm sure she has to say it, whether she likes it or not."
"Take the call in your office," Sims suggested.
It was my turn to shake my head. "No, nothing she says will be private. There's no point being discreet up here."
Gesturing toward my ear, I directed Sims to transfer the call to my Z-phone, which took Sims a moment to do because she was running the CIC pretty much by herself.
"Gunnery Sergeant," I addressed Adams correctly. "Good morning to you."
It was an awkward conversation. She must have been reading from a script, or she had been coached what to say. Several times the audio from her end cut out, and finally I had to cut in to explain.
"Adams, and whoever else is listening down there, you have to understand one thing. Up here, all our comms go through the Skippy-tell network, and if you say something he thinks I shouldn't hear or don't want to hear, he will edit that out of the audio. Got it? As far as I know, I am still in command of this ship, and the orders I received from UNEF Command instructed me to take the Dutchman on an urgent mission to intercept the Maxalt ships without delay. Those orders use the proper authentication codes."
That last part was true. Skippy had faked up legit-looking orders that I knew were bullshit, but I appreciated him trying to cover my ass.
"Heard and understood, Colonel Bishop," Adams replied, as in the background I could hear multiple people hissing at her. They were not too happy that she referred to me as Colonel instead of Staff Sergeant. E6 was a higher grade than I ever expected to attain, and I was proud that my regular Army rank was Staff Sergeant. After the mutiny I was committing, or attempting to commit, a bump up to E7 was likely not in my future. Mercifully, the conversation did not drag on much longer. Either Adams had reached the end of the script her superiors wanted her to read, or the knuckleheads down there decided to fall back and regroup, because she abruptly told me she would call me again later, because the call ended.
Skippy, I looked at the ceiling automatically. Is Adams okay?
As far as I can tell, Joe, he admitted. The monkeys down there are getting smarter. They had her calling through an old-fashioned landline, on an analog phone, if you can believe it. How they found one of those ancient black bakelite phones is amazing. They must have taken it out of a World War II museum.
Analog? The word sounded wrong in my mouth.
Yep, like a rotary dial, if you have any idea what that means.
I did know where the expression dial a phone came from, and I had seen pictures of old phones like that, but had never used one.
Ha! The thought made me laugh. The great Skippy the Magnificent was defeated by technology too crude for you to hack?
What?
He screeched with indignation. Dude, please, as if. It was actually an interesting and even amusing exercise to hack into that analog phone. Well, interesting for the 1.2 seconds it took for me to analyze the carrier wave and create a model of the phone's electric guts. Then I was able to use vibrating ions in the air to... Why am I bothering to tell you this technical stuff? If you like, I can tell you which 5 people were in the room with Adams, and I was also able to monitor their heart rates and respiration, so I know 4 of the 5 were quite nervous. The 5th person thinks Adams should be aboard the Dutchman with us.
Wait, whoa. You know what the person was thinking?
No, dum-dum, he laughed. Damn, you're gullible. I listened to that person talking with another officer 3 days ago, and the 2 of them agreed the government is foolish for thinking that surrendering to aliens is a good idea.
Joe, you have a lot of support down there in Monkey Land.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that doesn't do me much good right now, because the people making decisions are all against me.
Hey, since you know about heart rates and all that, how's Adams doing?
If I had to guess, I'd say she is a combination of pissed off and amused.
Uh-huh. That's what I got from the tone of her voice.
Shit. Any chance we could sneak her out of there?
Not that I can see, Joe, but you are responsible for creative thinking around here. By tracing the phone wiring, I can tell she is being held underground in a secure facility.
Ah, crap. That's not going to happen, then.
All right, Skippy. We got a lot of work to do.
All that day, Adams not being aboard the Flying Dutchman was at the back of my mind. Without thinking, I would turn to speak with her, or I started mentally assigning tasks to her before remembering she was not with us. It was an especially busy day, so I was still working at 0116 when my Z-phone beeped. It was Adams.
Skippy says we're clear to talk, she announced simply, as if it were an ordinary day.
It's true, Joe, the beer can chimed in. Margaret is in the bathroom of her quarters. I am spoofing the listening devices installed there.
Sergeant, Gunnery Sergeant, I corrected him before she could speak.
How about I just call her Margaret? Skippy sighed.
You need to speak very quietly and keep the conversation short. There are 3 Marine Corps security personnel in the room next to hers.
That's why I have the sink running, she explained.
She must have been speaking barely above a whisper, with Skippy boosting the sound for me because her voice was distorted.
Sir, is everything all right up there?
Situation normal up here, Gunny, I tried to joke.
That bad, huh? Sir, I don't think...
Her voice broke, and it was an audio distortion.
I don't think I'll be coming with you this time.
Don't say that, I said, as I tried and failed to think of a way to get Adams aboard the Flying Dutchman. We couldn't go on a mission without her.
Could we?
No, we couldn't. There must be a way to get the idiots on Earth to release her.
We've got a dozen nukes up here, I said to myself, except my stupid mouth forgot the to myself part and said it aloud.
Adams gasped.
That had better be a joke.
It was, I assured her.
Sorry, it's one of those things you think but don't say. My mouth didn't get the memo.
Listen, Adams, is there any way you can get to an isolated part of the base? We can have a dropship.
Forget about it, sir. They're watching me like a dog watching its owner eat steak. No way can I get anywhere alone. Do not think of a raid down here to pick me up. The people on the base are Marines. They may be wrong-headed about this, but they are my people. I won't risk anyone getting hurt or killed for me.
How are... That time I checked my mouth before it said anything stupid.
Gunny, I can't imagine the merry band of pirates without you.
I can't either. All the people dirt side while we were flying around that galaxy, wondering when or if we were ever coming back. Now I'll know what they went through.
Her voice faded away. What the hell could I say? I knew what I wanted to say. And as I was in my office speaking over the ultra-secure SkippyTel network,
I could be sure only two people and one beer can would hear us.
Adams, listen, I need to say,
no, you really don't.
Hearing her say that hurt. A lot. Then she added,
there are things I need to say, and I'm not going to say them either, if you know what I mean.
For a moment, I did not trust myself to speak.
Sir?
Sorry, Gunny. Sorry, Gunny. Gippy says I suck at talking anyway. You, have any advice for us?
Not that I can think of, she admitted, unprepared for my question.
I'm sure you'll think of something. I groaned. Wish I had your confidence. This time it really, truly may be impossible. Two Maxalt's warships? How can we—
You'll think of something, because as Skippy would say, you kind of have to, sir.
I heard that loud and clear, Adams.
Colonel, I have only one request.
Before I could reply, I had to hold the phone against my chest so she couldn't hear a choking sound escape my lips. Then I had to wipe tears away with my sleeve. It was an emotional time for both of us, so if anybody thinks I was getting soft, then, hey, screw you. A deep breath restored my ability to speak. What's that, Gunny?
You monkeys kick ass out there. Got that?
Got it. There was a pause, then...
Colonel, I lied. There is something else I want.
A snow globe from the Maxalt's gift shop? That made her laugh, louder than she should have given the circumstances, and it was my fault.
No, although that would be great, too. You come back safely. You, the beer can, Smythe, Sims, all of you. Especially you, sir. Please.
I'll do my best, Adams.
Your best is all I can ask.
There were sounds in the background.
I have to go. Vaya con Dios, Joe.
And the line went dead. Joe. She called me Joe. She had never done that before.
Skippy, what's happening down there?
The security people got suspicious when she left the sink running too long. They were monitoring an analog water meter that I couldn't hack into.
Duh. I told you to keep it short.
That's easier to say than do, shithead, I snapped at him.
Sorry. I shouldn't have said that. It's not your fault. You did great. I hope she'll be okay.
She may get in trouble for using an unauthorized communications device, but Margaret can take care of herself. There is only one thing you can do for her.
What's that? I asked hopefully.
Save the world. Again.